The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. How are you doing, people, on the regular chat? Kids Dead says, Jeff, your rant yesterday about the retarded Jeff baby had me rolling on the floor laughing. So good. Yesterday, I explored the idea of a Down syndrome JF baby. He would be the alpha of the Down syndrome. He would be big in the Down syndrome space. He would always be wearing ties and nice shirts, and he'd be very big in that space. Rockin' Robin Hood says, test, I have received your test. I made a montage during the night. I slept late yesterday to finish that montage because I was like, hey, there's a couple of predictions that I got right, especially lately. And I would like to leave a video montage as a legacy so that, you know, in 50 years, 100 years from now, if people want to know in a quick 2-3 minutes format, what were some highlights of my predictive capabilities? They can get it right here. The top 5 predictions by Dr. Jean-François Gariepy. Let's have a look. No violation of the law. You shouldn't be apologizing, which is my position on Dr. Disrespect. He shouldn't have just sexted her, he should have inseminated her.
That the messages did not constitute sexting.
I wanted to contact every public speaker, the Nick Fuentes of this world, and tell them, look, you could have a bomb under your car very soon.
It looks like a very natural virus that may have some inserts that lead me to think perhaps lab created, but there's a big leap between lab created and a bioweapon.
To talk about full frontal attack on the Groypers. Well, not on the Groypers, on me, by Tucker Carlson.
And I want to be clear, I am not done, okay? I'm coming for everybody. Charlie Kirk's death is really just a beginning. So welcome back.
Guilty.
is a man driven by two things: scientific curiosity and vaginal penetration. And I think we're gonna learn something. I believe that Elon might have a Jewish baby right now, growing into a pregnant Jewish woman. That is it, ladies and gentlemen, a montage of what I consider to be my five biggest predictions that came true. Of course, the ultimate prediction is the prediction of the revolutionary phenotype. Marby Dog says the Matrix movie is looking more like reality. We will all live in our pods and all human energy will be fuel for massive data centers. Well, I don't think that we will become fuel. If you use human bodies as fuel, you are not very intelligent. It's ridiculous. There's no reason you would do that. It's not an efficient. Humans are not a battery. They exist for themselves, and there are so much more efficient ways. If you want to turn some calories into energy, there are much more efficient ways. Whatever you feed the human, you might as well burn. You might as well burn and have a turbine. That is, you're going to get more energy from this than you're going to get under heat production by humans. It is ridiculous to think. This is what doesn't work in the movie Matrix. And Matrix is a great, it has great components, but when it fails a lot. Nick says, sup, JF, will you sell your BTC soon? Top this year? Yeah, I'm thinking that I will sell in November, December. unless something changes and I feel that there's fundamental changes that will lead to continued expansion. Because I don't know, will the bear market arrive or will we have I tend to think that we will have a crazy part of the market, and I tend to think it will be November, December, but could it get even more crazy? I mean, if the Fed goes into absolute printing and we don't give a fuck, that leads to a different outlook for Bitcoin. So I will have to adjust my plans as I see it, but my default program is to expect the peak to either have already occurred or to occur at 150K, 160K this November or December. Personally, I took the risk because I tend to over... I believe in Bitcoin and I tend to be greedy. I don't mind keeping my Bitcoin across various bull runs because my life is pretty self-sufficient. I don't need that money, so it's... To me, it's really just trying to make the most of it. And I would see this as happening November, December. We have Cringe Panda in the chat. She says, do you have epaulettes on every single shirt you own, or do you have just a bunch of the same shirt so no intellectual effort is wasted on choosing a shirt? Yeah, I have basically three of those shirts with epaulette. They're all the copy of the same. When I find a shirt that I'm comfortable in and that I like and that kind of looks okay for the camera, I buy many copies of it because I know I'll be rolling on them for many years. But do I have epaulettes on all shirts? No, I have equivalent shirts for more my everyday life. Well, first I have t-shirt for everyday life in the home, like pajama t-shirts, kind of. And then I have cleaner shirts for when I go out, and there's a gray one, a black one, two black ones. And then I have my studio shirts, which is three studio epaulette shirt. Je suis Charlie Kirk says, my mother doesn't want me to buy any Bitcoin. Well, yeah, I mean... your mother doesn't matter in this conversation. Your mother will be poor like most women. Nick says, if Mama JF returned, would you take her back? I guess. I am very, very harsh on betrayal. And I am not willing to take... Most of my exes will not qualify to come back. Although Mama JF is a special case because she is deluded. She has her own, rhythms and all. And in the end, I consider that perhaps she was my best ex in terms of being loyal, in terms of not trying to destroy my life and understanding that she had to go through the cost of her own instability. So I guess if she was to come back, I might include her in the queue for my current search. AquacNote says, if you're someone who listens to their mother, you probably belong on Reddit. Jack Duggan says, is JF Jean-Francois? Yes. And Marby Dog says, JF is a better man than me. I would not take back my ex. Well, I would not take back most of my exes, but you know, in retrospect and contrasting with other women I've known, Mama JF, despite her extreme unpredictability for anyone out there, for me, I understand Mama JF. I understand her art, and I can predict this. I can deal with those constraints. She's not the ideal woman, but maybe she's the best possible woman. Maybe she's the best that can be done on this fallen earth. We have to review some conspiracy theories that are emerging around Charlie Kirk. Very crappy and valid thinking, but let's have a look.
So you know the kid who was asking Charlie Kirk a question when Charlie got shot? Remember him? Everyone's feeling bad for him? Yeah, there's video footage of him practicing his reaction before it happened. So when Charlie got shot, you know, his reaction was to put his hands on his head, look shocked, shake a little bit. Yeah, he was doing that. He was practicing that in the crowd. And here's the freaking video.
So she claims that this is a guy practicing his reaction of shock. Look, there's many things where you may be thinking and you're in your own world and he's thinking about his question that he's about to ask, and or maybe he's seeing some other people in the crowd and reacting to what they're doing. I don't think this is evidence of preparation for a known shooting. So she claims that the fact that he did this before Charlie Kirk arrived, and then later he's gonna do this as he asks this question. So see, he's terrified when he sees Charlie Kirk being shot in the neck. He does the terrified face and look. Pocapilot says he was manifesting the assassination. Well, the claim is that he was practicing for something known, but there are just too many ways in which you can have that reaction while you're thinking or while you're seeing something else shocking. It's not very conclusive. So, uninteresting theory there. Cat Lady Genocide says Israeli interest controls TikTok now. They're amplifying all the schizo theories, JF. Yeah, that's very sad because we're getting a return to absolute censorship on the internet. That is really sad. It's going to ruin the TikTok experience. And we just have to count on parallel platforms now. We have to continue pushing for Rumble. We have to continue pushing for X, wherever. Whatever is that place where they accept our business, we must take. And I've applied for YouTube monetization, so we'll see. second stream for people outside of Western Hemisphere, please consider it. Also, Numadis Soybean, I will be banning you very soon. You are clearly here to make trouble. You are sending these small donations. In fact, I'm going to be banning you tonight, and perhaps I'll do it after the show. You are uninteresting. You are just there to create trouble, to call for the legalization of stuff. Thankfully, in that case, you were censored. The next time I see your name, I will be banning you. Also on the regular chat, you are uninteresting, really. Uninteresting there. You have disrupted this show through interventions, and I want this show to be headed toward more intelligence, and you maintain it down. You are, and I remember your nickname from like 5-6 years ago, but you are the kind of person that I'm not interested in including in my crowd. So you're gone from now on, and any sort of repeat or change of your nickname, I will detect you and I will ban you further. Nicholas Petris says, I remember that guy being a troublemaker, if I'm not mistaken. Exactly. Those are, I don't know what they do. Are they just deranged people? Are they agents paid to seed trouble? But I'm done with this. I'm an older man, and I really want to engage with people who are honest. Junie says, did you hear about the immunity vote for European Parliament member Ilaria Salis? I don't know who that is. You're going to have to tell me a link to the story because I don't know who that is. Cat Lady says, if you're going to troll, at least be interesting. Exactly. So we have here the rebirth of censorship. Censorship coming back. As soon as TikTok had Israeli interests controlling it, already, boom, a creator with 1.9 million followers. It's a permanent ban with no chance of appeal for breaking civility and speech policy. And I have been informed there is no chance of having the decision reversed. So it's so sad because people build and they get destroyed by these cartels, really. These cartels of thought and this control. Cringe Panda says, I have experience with these guys. Their intention is to send super chats that can get you booted from YouTube. Well, this one failed. He got censored by the advanced Streamlabs system. End of the line, Joel says, JF, in terms of live stream, do you consider Twitter X unviable for streaming compared to YouTube Rumble? Yeah, I start a stream or a space on Twitter, and it attracts just a small portion of my crowd. The fact is, the platform is not pleasant to be an audience member on. I'm sure you know that. I mean, do you run around finding Twitter live streams? It's a different crowd. There is a small portion of people who are willing to endure the deadness of that platform because the chat feels dead. The live streams feel... It feels like you're not really committed to watching something. It's just you're just clicking, and you're clicking on lists and feeds, and you just happen to fall on a stream. It's not serious. It doesn't feel like a place for a family regrouping of people who think alike. Rockin' Robin Hood says, Jeff, when and where will the French program that you will be on start? It will be on the Lux Media YouTube channel, and that will be on Tuesday. I'm excited about it. Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, I am starting a show, Courrier du Coeur, a love line where you will get the biologist perspective on improving your love life especially woman, female behavior in the couple, what can be improved, what can make it more interesting. Those are the things I'm interested in. Let's see here. Could I identify Numeli soybean by maybe by I'll have to find how do I ban someone from Streamlabs. I'll have to find this live. It's hard to. I've never really banned on Streamlabs. I ban generally on YouTube. Plapides says, JF, given that you grew up in the digital age, what made you choose biology / genetics field over computing / informatics? Both involve complex systematizing. Do you ever regret going into biology? No, I don't regret. I'm thinking that for most people, and perhaps even for me, I may have been more productive not pursuing biology so deep as to do a postdoc at Duke, you know, getting out of school at 28 years old, just to show that you can get to the end of it. I'm on the fence on perhaps I shouldn't have pursued it that deep. But otherwise, I'm very happy. I am fundamentally a biologist. You ask, why did I go into biology? It dates back to me being 7, 8, 9 years old, walking around my village, a very small population village of Quebec, with my net, capturing butterflies, capturing mantes religieuses, capturing dragonflies and putting them in aquariums and observing them, and even capturing sometimes, you know, these the chenille. I don't know in English what it is, but these worms that become butterfly. Capturing these, seeing them transform in my aquariums. For me, walking around the town with my bike, gathering rocks. Eventually, we found human bones. We found human bones that had fell into the river, and it made it into the local newspaper. Kids find some bones. They had a drift from the land of that was, oh yeah, it's a quarter pillar, the name. There was a drift of the land from a cemetery, and there were human bones that had fallen from the cemetery into the river. So you ask me how do I choose biology instead of computers? Well, it was deep inside of me. And then at 11, 12 years old, I get introduced to Euclid's element, geometry, become a big fan of math and a big fan of computers as the internet rise. Well, even before the internet, let's say in the period 1995 to 1997, the internet is not quite there in Quebec yet, and we have those BBSs, and I asked my father to buy me a phone line so I can run my own BBS, and so I'm there on my Pentium 5, 133 megahertz or something like that. And I'm running a BBS so that people can run networks. So I have all these passions in parallel that I've developed. But fundamentally, and even before, even around the time of the Euclid's element and my discovery of geometry and math, I read at some point The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, and I'm like, wow, this is so powerful. It explains everything. And I'm like, my mission in life will be to understand the social world, the world of humans, from a biological perspective. Because there was something that was wrong with The Selfish Gene. It explained way much more than Richard Dawkins wanted to... Richard Dawkins wanted to stop it there. And I was like, no, the theory is more powerful than the guy expressing it. The guy expressing it is being a cuck. See, there I was at 11, 12 years old, thinking Richard Dawkins is a fucking cuck. And yeah, that was fundamental. And so then I grew up I start working at grocery stores during the night, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., packing stuff, facing, rotating. I do that for 5 years in the switch between my high school years and my college years, Cégep in Saint-Jérôme. And I'm already in natural sciences, so I know I'm headed towards something like biology. Yeah, during those years, I was such a fan of biology. I was going further than what the Cégep would impose. I was reading molecular neurobiology, molecular science, molecular biology, these big textbooks, very thick textbooks that I was reading. And I was fascinated by the cell, fascinated by the single cell. And eventually I'm like, okay, I have this question in my heart from the beginning, which is, can we extend Richard Dawkins, not even extend it, but can we make the world realize that Richard Dawkins is a cuck? Can we be bolder in his application of the theory in a way he doesn't want it, but it doesn't matter whether he wants it. His theory applies to the human world. And that has been my life mission. Now, on that path, I'm like, okay, so what's the hot stuff that I can study that will place me in this place? And what was available then at the University of Montreal is, I can take a PhD in neuroscience. This will put me in the brain domain. And eventually, even if I start my PhD on lampreys and fish, I'm going to eventually get into the world of monkeys. And that's a jump that not many people are doing. But I did the jump from my doctorate on fish to my postdoctorate at the Duke University Monkey Lab. And so I was like, okay, now I'm getting into the social world. And unfortunately, there is not much place for complex research in neurophysiology of monkeys. There's all these extremely behavioralist, Skinner-type resistance in the field. They don't want to hear anything cognitive. They don't want to hear, look, I'm going to put a monkey in a complex situation, where he has a complex game to win, where he has to fool another opponent. Because they're so conservative and Skinnerist in this field that they're like, well, you haven't reduced your experiment to the minimum. Well, if you only reduce to the minimum, you're going to lose the complexity of the world. And the reality is that the reduced experiment is the error. The monkey clicks right or left. Monkeys don't click right or left in nature. In nature, monkeys are faced with complex stuff that they have to make calls about. It's probabilistic and it's never really the same. And sometimes there's other monkeys and they have to fool them before they get to the food. So I tried in that field. I got discouraged by the resistance in the field, and I was not interested. I think the field doesn't deserve any progress. I think what we need to do is cut funding at this point to all neuroscience and let them think. Let them think for 100 years, because this ideological limit that they impose is not healthy for the search for truth. And questions of psychology and sociology will have to cross the boundary of behavioral complexity. We will have to know how the animal brain behaves in a complex environment. But we have such resistance. They don't want to they don't want to do it. So I left the field, and then I got into writing The Revolutionary Phenotype, which I consider as my true legacy to the world. Really, this theory is so big, it really doesn't matter the rest. It doesn't matter what I could have or didn't do in cognitive neuroscience, because it's so unimportant compared to the theory of phenotypic revolutions. This tells us what will happen with AI. This tells us how we will get replaced. And that is much more important than even the search for a proper theory of cognition. Big Time Ape is sending me all sorts of stuff, but it's disorganized. Artemis says, "Hi, Jeff. I suffer from ADHD. How can I motivate myself to work for several hours a day and over the long term? It's very difficult for me as long as there isn't some kind of daily motivation nor meaning." Well, exactly. I think you're touching the point. I don't know that you can. That's why ADHD people take these medicines. It's because I don't know that there is a way you can make something that you're not fascinated about work for yourself. That's precisely the problem. It's that certain pursuits in life are very hard for the ADHD brain because they're really not interesting, and you really shouldn't be spending your time on them. So I would say the only solution to ADHD is to engage with the stuff that you are fascinated about to the point where you can see a meaning to them. And just accept that by not engaging with these other things, you will be missing on opportunities, but those opportunities, your brain wasn't designed for them. So in a way, you're going to improve your life by focusing it on what matters. And probably what matters is some amount of financial stability, so a job that you're going to have to do for the sense of surviving and for the sense of providing for your family. Or perhaps, maybe if you're in luxury, or perhaps you're a woman, you have a husband, or perhaps you are somewhat wealthy or you have savings. In that case, just center your life around baby making. And the fact is that if you're working on baby making, you'll see that anyways the everyday life of parenting is filled with all sorts of parallel stories and stuff that you have to do, such that you can actually have your ADHD brain jump from let's wash some dishes, let's do some homeschooling, let's do this and that. So there is no big solution to your ADHD problem other than have something that is meaningful enough to do for you that you're willing to put efforts and to stay in it while your brain goes elsewhere. Big Time Ape says, "My feeling has always been that the mutation rate is higher in Africa. How else can you explain the Homo sapiens outcompeting the Neanderthal even after 300,000 years of cold climate?" Need answer here, JF. Well, I don't know that it's the case. In fact, it is believed one of the hypotheses for why we had white skin, of course, partly to get more light in a low light environment during the winter so that we can produce vitamin D. But one other explanation for why we have white skin is to explain why white people have a higher mutational rate. The measured rate is actually higher, slightly higher in white people. What you are doing there is extrapolating from, you are thinking, how else can you explain the Homo sapiens outcompeting the Neanderthal? Well, you don't have to invoke differential mutation rate for this. The mutation rate they feed random into the system. The explanation to why Homo sapiens won over Neanderthal while also integrating parts of Neanderthal in its genome doesn't have, in fact, probably couldn't be random mutations at a higher rate, because it's not a race. You're not evolving faster to a finished form through mutational rate. You are being selected at all times, and it's the selection that matters. It's not the mutation rate. So it's not like Neanderthal went out there in the cold, accumulated mutations at a rate of mutation such that they dominated the place. It's, the question is, what was their potential evolutionary direction? What were their limits? And there may have been simply a limit to the Neanderthal phenotype that wasn't crossable. And if I had to guess, I would say possibly something along intelligence. Maybe Homo sapiens had certain constraints on the way it was building its cranium, on the way it was building maybe its development limits, its boundaries, and the way it grows. There may have been something that was strongly limiting to Neanderthal, allowing them not, keeping them from crossing certain boundaries of intelligence, certain thresholds of intelligence. That is one guess. Any other hypothesis is valid, and I don't think we are set on this issue. But you can invoke any sort of natural selection pressure, but not mutational rate. Mutational rate only represents the speed at which you will converge toward within the natural selection pressures that you have. ZZ says Neanderthals had bigger brains, though. I know that, so that's why I'm that's why my language is not about bigger brain. I say constraints. Maybe there was trade-offs. Maybe the brains were bigger, but they were built in a certain way that couldn't unlock higher intelligence, or maybe they had higher intelligence, and maybe it was about something else. I'm open to everything in terms of natural selection pressure, trade-offs, something like that. But the mutation rate itself is not the way to think about this. Because definitely what led to the initial difference between Neanderthals and whatever else was there at the time, which eventually become Homo sapiens, that difference cannot be explained by differential mutation rate. It is an evolutionarily naturally selected difference that existed. And it's possible that when Neanderthal got out of wherever they stemmed from, Middle East or Africa or whatever you want to think of, it's possible that they trapped themselves into a dead-end niche. A dead-end niche where they couldn't evolve higher sociality, perhaps, because they had already pre-evolved so hard into a direction that was making them survive the cold that they kind of had specialized. And perhaps it took first a hotter climate in which Homo sapiens could stem and develop, and develop into a niche that wasn't a dead end for whatever criteria, say intelligence, or whatever criteria came for it to dominate over Neanderthal. Lots of possible explanations. All of them include, though, natural selection rather than rather than mutation rate. Light Guru says, Jeff, what happens when AI replaces all the jobs? Like short-term, when there is no work, what happens? I'm not sure it will happen that way. I think there will be niches. I think of it as niches, okay? There will always be jobs. There will always, down the line, be something that a human has to do, but that job may be more and more specialized, and it may be more, maybe whatever the robot cannot do. And that may be like, at the end of it, it may just be the only job left might be programming robots. So being a coder of robots certainly will have to be a job left. But think of it in terms of niches. So it's all about, we have farmed into humanity humans who have a certain capacity. They have a behavioral space, multidimensional space of what they can do. They can move their arms like this. They can't, let's say you take a human at the bottom of the intelligence scale, or maybe even up to the middle. They can't become a coder. They can't become a quantum physicist. But they can screw a screw, and they can solder some iron, and they can, there's a list of things they can do. Now, when the robots come in, they will occupy these low-level niches. So there will be extra humans that are incapable of surviving on the free market, because these humans who will eventually, all of their capacities will be reproducible by the Optimus robot of Elon Musk, they won't be able to survive. So what will happen, you say then? Well, there might be governmental programs that say, we're just going to keep these humans alive. We're just going to allow them to continue making babies. There might be eventually some sort of evolutionary pressure if the governments aren't too generous with a kind of infinite welfare, and if the government eventually get cracked down either because of economic unsustainability or because of conservative ideology that says we're just going to cut welfare, then there might be people who are excluded from society, and there may be an evolutionary pressure that they make less babies and they eventually disappear from society. In the long term, they will have to disappear. In the long term, life doesn't let you exist if you're not capable of bringing efficiency to your own survival. Okay, we have trolls. I'm banning some trolls here. So yes, at first you may have layers of, in the very long term though, because I don't think it's going to be like a genocide or some radical eugenics. But I think there will be some soft eugenics playing over many, many generations, where it's like some people who are literally not more useful than a Optimus robot, they will either have to fend for themselves, or they will have to find ways to develop markets that are not dominated yet by the robots. And eventually they will just suffer from it to the point where they will end up being excluded from the social choices of females, and they will get rejected, basically. That there might even be a term for these people that eventually rises. You know, they will be seen as losers of the world. In the same way, a woman, currently a liberal woman, will say, oh, he's an incel, or he's a maniac, or he's a deadbeat, or a loser. There might be a word eventually that comes to describe these incapacitated, less than robot performance humans. Click Accept says, what do you mean by useful, though? Well, it is a very... That is a very relative term, because usefulness is a very important concept in the development of a free market. Because it's like, okay, let's say we have rap music of the 90s. Just people with gangs and, you know, in front of the camera just rapping. Is that useful? Well, if you think of it as engineering from the perspective of societal engineering or perhaps you have a higher vision of music and you don't like rap, and then it would not seem useful. But it is useful to the extent that there is demand for it. So the rapper of the 90s were rich because people were buying their CDs. And this is the usefulness that I'm talking about, not the usefulness of some objective observer or engineer trying to fix society, but usefulness in terms of capable of creating value for someone else who has money. Now, that's a very, very loose and broad definition. And this is the greatness of capitalist societies, was that they were able to take from that usefulness and drive themselves forward toward levels of wealth and levels of productivity that no one else could have ever achieved. And so that was the proof, in a way, that capitalism, free market, can bring us further rather than control, authority, and dictatorships. So usefulness, that's how I approach it. Now, there is a lot of losses in this process of usefulness. If you can have misguided societies that just make poor decisions, and then you get something like rap, or you get something that, porn, let's say, you get something that is destructive and yet that is chosen by people. And so it has its relative usefulness by my definition, that someone selects it and someone wants it. But I'm fine with the world being inefficient, because I know that in the attempt to make the world more efficient, in the attempt to get rid of liberty, you are losing everything that brought us where we are here. Why do we have the internet? Why do we have technology? Why do we have superior productivity? All of it is because we've let things that a dictator wouldn't have seen in advance, we've let them be. So you have to let your society be. Bitzilla says, I haven't seen you in years. This is good. Well, I'm happy to be here. I've been on Rumble and Odyssey for years, so I've been on the internet every day, Bitzilla. But if you stay only on YouTube, of course, you were not aware of that. Now I've applied to the YouTube monetization. We'll see how it goes. Pocapilot says, Jeff, do you think easier access to attractive, marriable woman is a good motivation to pursue success? The state of marriage and woman seems more blackpilling rather than motivating. Absolutely, absolutely. This is the cross to carry of the male. You have to be successful, and it's not even for yourself. You have to be successful because it's going to attract females. And in a way, you know, this is why the waste isn't to be criticized so much. This is why I don't complain so much that I made it to postdoc level at Duke University. Because although I recognize the waste of time that it was on my life, and sometimes, in fact, even the intellectual waste that it was still a peacock tail that I can carry. I can still say, I'm Dr. Jean-François Gariepi, and suck that... suck that cock, bitch. Big Time says, Jeff is definitely my favorite bigot. It's unfortunate that Nick Fuentes has dominated that space. You're definitely quite a bit smarter than Nick Fuentes. Perhaps there's such thing as too much. Oh, definitely. I mean, intelligence is punitive, and that is not a negative comment on Nick. Nick is a very, very high intelligence guy. But definitely, I am a higher intelligence guy than him. I have a 5 or 10 IQ points over him, and that's fine. That's fine. He's still not in any way a you know, a normal intelligence guy. He is still very much above. But yeah, to come back to the other question, you have to be successful and wealthy in some form. Doesn't have to be mega wealth, but you have to be desirable in some way. And you can be the jazz musician if you like. You can be the social guy of your locality. You can be wealthy. You have to have something. You have to have something that will lead a woman to say, I want to farm this guy's genes. Because that's what women are ultimately. They are eugenicists. And they are trying to make decisions with their vagina. They're trying to say, how do I want my children to be? Jew says, no one is smarter than Papa JF. All right, and Bidzilla says, I found you on X. Yes, all of my links are always in the description below. Ked's Dad says, have you ever met someone smarter than you? That is a good question. That is a good question. It's very hard to say, very hard to say at my level of intelligence and at my level of stubbornness, because I see the dimensions of intelligence at my level to be a more complex story than a single line. And so I don't think I would ever say, okay, this guy is more intelligent than me. I don't think it's something I could say or I would want to say. Now, definitely, there are people who I can say they are on a certain type of intelligence. And then you're going to tell me types of intelligence don't exist. And I'm going to tell you they kind of do. But there are people definitely that I can acknowledge are cognitively superior in that subdomain. Every day on our Discord server, people are talking about chess. I have completely disconnected from chess when I was 16 years old, and I never came back to it. And today, if I was to open up and play with random people, my ELO would probably stay stable at 1,000, maybe even go down a little bit. I'm definitely not a chess player. So I know that there are people whose brain are way more fit to handle the chess and to go through with playing good chess. Now, I tend to think that the raw number of the intelligence as measured by a test matters less and less as you get into the high intelligence. When you get into the domain of the 130 to 150, I don't really care about the number. I care about... I care about what kind of contribution can you do to knowledge, and could you prove a new formalism? Could you prove a new theory? That is what I care about at the 120, 130. And then there are people who are capable of scoring super high. They will be in the 150, 160 range, but they will never, never, never invent a new theory. They will never improve the state of knowledge of humanity. They're just good little mechanical Turks, like computers in a way. They're capable of just generating repeatable material and coming up with the right answer, like little sheeps. And there's a level of testosterone at some point that you need to go past that, to go, I'm just not going to... not just good at repeating whatever you want to hear, but I can shock you with something new that you hadn't considered. Francois Garceau says, JF, do you know Orion Tarabon, and what do you think of his analysis of relationship dynamics? I don't know who that is. I would have to have a link to study. Yukimaru says, JF, I don't remember the last time you suggested to Brett Weinstein to read The Revolutionary Phenotype. Did he end up reading it, or did you give up on hope that he will read it? Well, maybe I should send a little tweet soon. I do like to remind Brett Weinstein that he should read The Revolutionary Phenotype. I wouldn't say that I have lost hope. I would say, in fact, I am kind of burning in an intense feeling of vengeance. And I am seeing the signs that Brett Weinstein will one day die. And it's not that I lost hope. It's that actually I'm starting to think, do I want him to read The Revolutionary Phenotype? Or do I want him to die without having reading it, so I can write a eulogy of him as he dies? The day he dies, I'm going to be on Twitter, and I'm like, the same way I did with Jane Goodall, you know? So it's not that I lost hope, it's that I have two temptations. Get Brett Weinstein to read The Revolutionary Phenotype, or write a eulogy of Brett Weinstein in which I highlight that he hasn't read it. And that is kind of the dilemma in which I find myself. I had no choice because they all ignored my work. I had no choice to start liking it. I like it when I write The Day Jane Goodall Dies, that she hasn't done a shit for science. I like it. I'm starting to like it. At the beginning, it was like, oh, I'm the black sheep of humanity. There I am. And everyone is like, oh, I can't believe he said that. But at this point, I'm like, fuck it. We're gonna teach the generation of biologists 20 years down the line after you're dead. They're going to know the truth. I have no hope for you boomers. Frog Eyes says, can't wait for JF to shit on the head of Weinstein. And it's like, because it would be so easy to engage with a theory and say, look, this guy's politics are evidently different than mine's, but we should still consider his theory, which has nothing to do with politics. It would be so easy. But in a way, I want these people's ignorance of the truth to stand as a historical example. And I want people because in 1,000 years, Israel, Jewish academia won't mean much. You know, something else will be the system in operation then. And you can bet that it's not going, we're going to be in a very different demographic political world. And in a way, I want people in 1,000 years from now to be able to answer to Cat Lady's question, why are they ignoring your work? The answer is quite simple. And I want people in 1,000 years to be able to look back and know that they are ignoring my work because I am free, male, white, and Israel critical and race conscious. They're ignoring my work not because I said anything false, not because I've been demonstrated false in what any of these beliefs I just listed, but it's because they want society to be different. They are ignoring me for moral reasons. They are ignoring me for the very same reason I got shocked by Richard Dawkins when I was 12 years old. And I said, what the fuck is this guy talking about? That we should ignore the theory of evolution when it comes to humans? That we should just sweep it under the rug because it's too dirty, even if it's true? What kind of program is that? How are you going to sell to the next generations that there is something morally outstanding and great about the search for truth, and you're already lying to them? And you're already lying to them in the way that matters to their lives, and that will end up to some of them dying from the errors that you lead them to commit, because it's life or death. The question of Are we going to jungle with, are we going to confront the realities of the theory of evolution, of the biological measures that differ across groups in humanity, of the differentials of power between asymmetric groups and people who favor their own ethnic over that of others? If you don't confront these ideas, you're sending people to the slaughterhouse. Literally, some of them will die from not listening to their own instincts. And I want people to know in the future, people 1,000 years from now, the theory of phenotypic revolution was ignored. Up to now, we can say it was ignored for 7 years because there were radical ideologues who didn't want to confront truths about race, Israel, the existence of different groups in humanity, and the existence of, obviously, demographic interest and ethnic interest in society. They wanted to be in denial so hard that they have dismissed the thinker who came up with this correct theory of evolution. They have dismissed him because he believed these other things that were uncomfortable to them. That is the story of our current public epistemology. That is the situation in which we are right now. And I hope that it is properly recorded for the anthropologist of the future in the archives. This is the situation, a proper theory of biology, which will be known to be true by the time anyone starts caring, is being ignored at a time where people have access to this truth, but they don't want to see it because the guy who carries this truth happens to believe other things. Jackie Chan has sent a super chat. Let's have a look. How do I?
Did our capacity for speech evolve with intelligence or before it? I think most great apes, their larynx can't form sounds for words, right?
Did our capacity for speech evolve before our intelligence? Or before it? With intelligence or before it? Certainly, there must have been with intelligence. I believe that the fact that we were speaking, and in fact, this is a point I make in the moral signal. There are things in human language that prove that that language didn't just appear in a single shot. That there were layers of refinement into language. You have meta signals, for example, in humanity. A meta signal is a signal about a signal. So it can be very simple, a signal about a signal. Maybe if you tell me something and I respond, okay, I'm telling you I have received your statement. So I'm telling you something about your statement. I'm saying, okay, I'm saying I agree with your statement or I received your statement. I'm sending you a receipt. That is a meta signal. Meta signals cannot evolve as long as there aren't signals to begin with. And meta signals, they respond to their own evolutionary pressures. Why did we have to give feedback to people, showing them that we have understood their words? Well, it's because you start with a need to communicate an information, and then there are behaviors to be adjusted in response to that information, even in the sender of the initial information. So the sender starts needing an update on whether you've received the message. That is the reasoning for the evolution of a meta signal. Now, those meta signals can only have evolved with intelligence. They can only have evolved progressively after signals were already established. So you can have a first layer that evolves that says, okay, whenever there's a plan to do something in family, let's say let's walk to the park, someone will send that signal. The father will say, we're going to the park. Now, if the reception of the signal is important to the sender, in the sense that as a father saying we're going to the park, you not only want to impose this and express it, you want to know that the recipients of the information know that you've said that. You want a receipt, a confirmation that, okay, we're all set. Everyone has to put their socks on and their coats on. We're going to the park. Now, this is where the okay evolves. This is where the response, the receipts, everything that we do. And there are much more complex meta signals than okay. Okay is just the basic example. But eventually you want an update on the state of knowledge that you've just shuffled. You want to know that your change, your sending has worked. So therefore, I believe that there must have been a basic intelligence, certainly. Certainly there was some degree, because there's intelligence in chimpanzees and gorilla. So you had a functioning brain. Think of it, it started somewhere along the chimpanzee level. And eventually, at some point, language comes in. But language has probably created a whole niche that eventually farmed more intelligence into existence. Because of this multi-layered evolution I just described between signals and meta-signals. Now, in the category of meta-signals, you have all sorts of... very complex types. For example, rhetorical questions. So you have questions evolve first. You have a capacity to ask questions. Well, even before the questions comes in, you need to have leaks, control leaks and informational leaks. So let's say I look at a woman and she's beautiful and she looks at me. And the way she looks at me, I can interpret she's single. Now, that can all happen without words. But eventually, you have a layer that evolves and words come in and explicit questions can appear. So now you can ask, are you single? Now, this is much better than the leaks. This is much better than informational extrapolations and all. Now I can know not only whether she appears single and whether she... I could fuck her whether she's single or not anyway. But now you get a confirmation. No, there is no man claiming me. Now you have a whole contractual state emerging in the response, yes, I am single. And then you have rhetorical questions. So eventually, the human brain realizes that the question is actually more informative than the answer. So if you ask a woman if she's single, maybe she's lying. So the information even there is not perfect. But you know what's perfect information? It's the fact that the guy asked, are you single? Now, this guy revealed something that would not be revealed by either a yes or a no from the woman. The woman can say yes or no, but, you know, she can say she's single, but the reality is she was still with her boyfriend 2 days ago. They kind of spoke rough to each other, and she considers herself single, but she's not single for real. A yes or a no to the question is not 100% informative about the state of the world. It's just telling me about maybe there's an opening or maybe there's not. And it's a probabilistic thing. Now, the guy who asked the question, are you single? This guy revealed his hand. This guy for sure is looking for a partner. This guy maybe for sure isn't single, but for sure is considering himself single enough that he's looking for a mate. And you realize that there is power in the question, that there is an informational leak in the information-seeking device. So the question is an information-seeking device. It leaks information. It leaks information even more than it gathers. And think of it from an entropic perspective. It's like a leaky thermodynamic system. It's like when you're trying to heat your home, but you're actually wasting so much heat in the chimney because you're burning so much wood that most of the heat that you generate is lost. And this happens in the informational exchange of the explicit question. So we have evolved a layer of questions. Well, we have evolved first we have evolved detection capabilities even before the question. Then you have questions. They bring you somewhere as a meta signal. You are demanding a signal from the other about the state of things. Then you have the leaky questions. The questions start leaking information. And now when you ask someone else if they're single, it's because you're sexually interested. So you've leaked that signal. And then rhetorical questions come in. Rhetorical questions. Something like, are you retarded or what? This doesn't mean, it's not an accusation that you are, it is not an actual question inquiring about your degree of intelligence and whether you are mentally handicapped. It is a question that is meant specifically to just tell you that you're behaving in a retarded manner. So if I come to you and I say, are you retarded or what? Am I really demanding information about mental handicaps or thinking that you may have a mental handicap? No. I am just telling you, you're acting stupid. Shut the fuck up. And that is a rhetorical question, my friend. And it is, as I've laid it out, it is the fourth layer of the informational exchange. And it kind of stops there. It kind of stops there. I don't know if you can go further than the in that branch of questions. I don't know if you can go further than the rhetorical question. But then I found myself thinking, you know, about and I'm still answering to Jackie Chan's I'm still answering to Jackie Chan's super chat from 30 minutes ago. But then you start asking yourself, okay, there are civilizations out there. Some of them are layer one, some of them are layer two, some of them are layer three, some of them are layer four. So some of them, they only have observation, they don't have words. Some of them, on other planets, they have first degree questions, but they don't have informational leaks from the questions. Some of them have the informational leaks, but they don't have the intentionally rhetorical question. Now you have to ask yourself, are we at the peak of cognition? Have humans attained the peak? Or are there civilizations out there that could look at us and they're stuck at the rhetorical question layer? And then you have to ask yourself, what would that look like? What would be a civilization that is so advanced that they are astonished at the idea that we merely are at the rhetorical question level? That's interesting. Because I've been having this feeling even in my life. I've been watching women sometimes. And when they get emotional and when they get kind of stupid and evil at times, and I'm like, wow, a little creature of evil, a little limited creature trying to make double entendres and trying to provoke me. And wow, wow. I've looked at them sometimes as an alien civilization would look at us. I've looked at them and I was like, wow, oh. This little beast-like attitude, this attempt at creating fake jealousy, this lie here and there, isn't that low? Big Time Abe says, we have over the last century grown out conceptual model of the world at an unprecedented degree not seen before in human history. This shows up on IQ test because it basically is what intelligence is. Open Borders says, he sends a super chat on entropy. He says, hi, JF, I haven't watched your show for a while. Hope you've been well. How is the impregnating of women going on? Are you restricting yourself to whites and East Asians? Yes, at this point in my life, I have the luxury of not even needing a future girlfriend. So I would take only the top of the top. I would want a... It doesn't have to be a woman that is 10 out of 10 in beauty or that is very high intelligence. So, but I need a woman that I'm confident has value. And I'm not dating the bottom anymore. I'm not dating the bottom of the barrel. So absolutely, yes, I would restrict... my choices to the highest quality woman. AIM as a super chat. Well, thank you so much for the support and for the nice words. Indeed, I work hard for all of this. For those of you who are there at the beginning of the show, I work hard to get these predictions right. And to do my job properly. Despite the small audience that we have and all, I don't think you can get that degree of intelligence elsewhere. I don't think so. Maybe I'm deluded and I'm just a rambling old man. I'll never know. And, you never know these things because you never know whether you are like in a Dunning-Kruger type of situation where you're stupid, but you don't see it. But I tend to think that I am bringing people ideas that are very rare out there, that are original, that you cannot get much else, you cannot get as much elsewhere. Guillaume Antel says, Jeff, would you be willing to let another scientist, say a female scientist, take up your own theory just to get it accepted by the academy? On my dead body, bitches. On my dead body. I would take a piss on the legacy of this thief. If someone was to take my theory... No, it's very important. It's actually very important. The attachment of a theory or a discovery or whatever progress of humanity to the proper person is major in the development of culture. Because if you allow thievery, if you allow plagiarism, you allow a misdirection of the meritocratic reward of science, which are already pretty low. Like saying something very intelligent and the people who have made massive scientific discoveries and progress, they don't really have a way to cash in on it. Of course, they can become professors and all and get a job, but that's nothing compared to the industry. In the industry, you can become a billionaire. You can become a multi-billionaire. So for this reason, it's very important that the little reward that you get from at least the social credit, and not just this, but also in guiding the rest of society to say, hey, JF was right. So maybe we should listen to JF a little more. Maybe he's also right on these other things. That is super important. If you destroy this and you allow subversion and kind of half lies about did he really come up with it or did he take it from him, then you completely destroy this proper mechanism of, no, he was the thinker who was right, and therefore we should listen to him more. Frog Eyes says, Jeff, if you could look into the future and see that in 1,000 years from now, the only humans left on the planet are from a different ancestry group that is very different from white people, would you consider reproducing with an African today to be part of that surviving group? It's not in me. I'm not saying that. First, I had a woman in my life. I had wives who had some degree of black ancestry. So let's leave aside this personal choice question. I'm not radically anti-black in terms of choosing your mate or whatever. There are circumstances where you do it. But taking your hypothetical scenario where I get to see in the future and it's a totally different group than mine that has won, and therefore should I try to sneak in my genes into this group with the idea that I'm going to at least survive within a group that's very different, but parts of my genetic legacy will be preserved. I am not this kind of guy. I'm not this kind of guy. I wouldn't do it. I am a man who's ready to die for his beliefs. And I'm ready to die for who I am. And no, I would not want to sneak in just because I'm not desperate so much as to say I want 1,000th of my genome to survive in some future African society. I don't care about this. In a way, I am a stubborn Braveheart style. You know, Braveheart, the movie Braveheart, that kind of represents how I think of the world and yelling freedom as I get my legs and arms ripped off. That is me. And therefore, my position on the white phenotype and what we are as European is I want it to exist, but I'm not willing to succumb to all possible laws to beg for a place into existence. If there is no place on this earth for the white phenotype, then so be it. I will die screaming freedom rather than kneel to an alternative that I don't respect. That would be my approach. Go out in glory. Go out in glory. If it is not to exist, then I might as well not be part of it. And I have this thinking also in the domain of dating, where I'm like, okay, maybe women don't deserve me. I know it sounds bad, but no, I truly think that maybe they don't deserve me. Maybe the world doesn't deserve white people. Maybe human populations do not deserve freedom. So that's how I see the world. I'm not desperate for continued existence in worlds that I don't respect. I would very much like if we can make an earth in which we can live side by side and in respect of each other. But if this is not happening, then I don't care going out in a scream of freedom. I don't care if it's my last contribution. I'm not desperate at all. Frog Eyes says, you Puritan fucks will regret it when my half-black progeny are the last ones standing. Well, you do you, Frog Eyes. You do you. That is totally fine. That is absolutely fine. I may have had a different response to the question if I was at the bottom of society and if I was depressed or if I didn't have the luxury of of having enjoyed my life, perhaps I would have said yes. If I had no babies in my life, if I had no family, perhaps I would say yes. I absolutely need at least one baby. Give me an African wife. But I think we have to also look at the world with a degree of luxury and saying there's some bottoms we will not reach. Anything you're willing to do, the problem with what you're willing to, everything you're willing to kneel for, they will have you kneel for it at some point. So at some point you have to say no. I'm not going to do disparate decisions. I consider I'm a diamond for this world. You can throw me to the trash. You're just going to have lost a diamond. That is the kind of confidence I invite you guys to look at the world from. And also look at your dating. Look at your dating life and just exude that confidence that you are worth something and that you are demanding stuff. Yes. Yes, I am demanding honesty. Yes, sorry. I know it's not very 2025. Yes, I am expecting honesty, loyalty, actual love, care. Demand all of it. Big Time Ape says, I think we are going to nuke ourselves and 100 million years from now, the cephalopods are going to become a technological species and probably resurrect us in some kind of Jurassic Park. I personally don't think that the nuclear scenario is that dramatic. I've been working through in my head with this, the whole, well, what if Skynet type multi warhead attacks, Russia sending them to the US, the US sending them to Russia. There might be a lot of human loss if that happens, but I actually doubt that you can eradicate humanity with nuclear bombs. I don't know. It's my call. When I faced the idea of a phenotypic revolution, it became much less scary, the idea of nuclear war. Because first, if there is a big enough nuclear war, we may achieve a lowering of our technological societies. And we may reach a point where we're not even capable of doing genetics. Because people scatter and they form tribes and everything goes back to some kind of post-nuclear dark age. So in a way, nuclear war could save us from a phenotypic revolution. Secondly, the thing is there's so much carpeting to do. I don't think countries would even care. Like, okay, you can care. Let's say you're in a country in a very vengeful and heavy war. Okay, you might care about sending a nuclear bomb to a city of 1 million. And maybe down the line you care about sending a nuclear bomb to a city of 20,000. But are you going to send a nuclear bomb to a city with population 13, with population 50? You're not going to waste a nuclear bomb on this. Even if you're in all-throwing mode, you're never gonna carpet bomb the whole surface of Russia. So no matter how hard it gets in terms of a nuclear annihilation scenario, it's not to the point of questioning the existence of humanity. Now, that's my prior positioning. That's my prima facie positioning. Now, there are people who come and say, well, you know, it will have all these consequences on the electric grid. But humans are capable of living without all of this. Humans are absolutely capable of rebuilding an agrarian society, a tribal society. And yes, there will be lots of death. But you would absolutely not have a complete eradication of humanity. And whatever would be left of humanity would look very much like the societies of perhaps 200,000 years ago.
50,000 years ago. And these people would, on top of it, have a little advantage because they would be much more knowledgeable. Perhaps they would have saved some of our civilization's knowledge. So I've been faced with the fact that the phenotypic revolutions are actually the only mechanism by which you can have a full eradication of a life form. Of a life form that is as spread and as tough as humanity has been. Reclaimed Man says, if we can reconcentrate... I will not read the rest. Okay. That is it for tonight, boys. I believe that we are through the subjects I wanted to cover. Oh, yeah, there's Candace Owens says that she received a phone call on the day of Charlie Kirk's death saying that her and Tucker Carlson could be next. Definitely, with everything that's coming out, and even that there's even a Josh Hammer post. The Josh Hammer post seeks to prove that Charlie Kirk was still with Israel, and that his telegram discussion in which he says, forcing me to leave the pro-Israel cause. Josh Hammer claims that it was just him steaming off his pressure, his anxiety, and that he wasn't really thinking it. Now, the problem with this conversation, which happens a little later, apparently, perhaps even an hour or hours before he gets killed, it's very bizarre, because this is not Charlie Kirk saying he is with the pro-Israel cause at all. You have a Charlie Kirk saying, thank you for the help today, guys. So that was following a discussion in which he trained for pro-Israel or anti-Israel arguments. And then very bizarre, I mean, the next day. So this is the day Charlie Kirk gets shot. Charlie Kirk says, oh yeah, I'll be at Utah Valley University. He says this before going to sleep. And so at 11:26 p.m. And then he gets a message, and the name of the person speaking says, is Bard. We don't know who that is, but he says, say hi to your Antifa friends. That kind of sounds like a threat, like a potential threat. And I'm always disgusted with these people who use the left to kind of imply threats. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm your right-wing friend, but, you know, be careful with the bullets. Because it's like, well, effectively, you are carrying what Antifa would want. They want their operations of fear to be changing how I think, to be making me more cautious. They want their operations to scare me. And by saying this, you are carrying their threat. So in general, I would say Josh Hammer's publication of this conversation has nothing to reassure me. Charlie Kirk merely was polite in it, saying, thank you for the help today, guys. Politeness doesn't mean I'm still with Israel. Charlie Kirk is much more explicit in the Telegram conversation that we know of than he is here. There's a way you can say thank you, guys, for the convo, and yet the convo may have been much harsher than it seems. And it's certainly not a confirmation that Charlie Kirk is back with Israel. Not because you say thank you to a Jew that you're you're back into the fold. Everything is forgotten. Everything is forgotten. You've said thank you. That's fine. And then, you know, that threat carrying, very worrying to me. We should pay attention to this. Who is this person? Why was he mentioning Antifa friends? Very bizarre. This Josh Hammer character is bizarre overall. That is all I had to say for tonight. We are, what, Thursday?
So we should have a show tomorrow. What do I have on the calendar? Oh yeah, tomorrow someone wanted to make a review of a video called Ancient Language Expert, Jesus Christ Used Children as Drugs. That sounds like a very devastating, that sounds like a ridiculous video. Now, he wants to pay me for making a review of it. I guess I have to do it if he pays me. I'll have to maybe check out that video tonight and see if I can. Maybe it's funny, maybe it's conspiratorial, maybe. But it's like, Jesus Christ used children as drugs. I don't think so. I don't think so.